have to get all my papers here. It's so good to be here. Again, my name is Lil. I'm compulsive overeater. I'm so looking forward to this weekend to be able to immerse myself in program. And it's just so great to see all of you here. I know many of you, and of course some new faces as well. I'm going to start off by just telling you a little bit about my story. We all have stories, don't we? I was born in a small town up in northern Wisconsin, up on the Great Lake of Lake Superior, the land of Gitche-Gumee. I was the oldest of four children. And during my childhood, I had kind of a rough childhood. I was physically, emotionally, and verbally abused by my parents. We were quite poor. And I do think that probably the financial hardships that my parents had probably contributed to some of the stress in our household. But there's also a real strong history of alcoholism on both sides of my family. So over the years, I've learned that I probably was hardwired genetically to be predisposed to some sort of an addiction. So here I am. At home, mealtimes were very stressful. There was a lot and a lot of arguing, and oftentimes I was being criticized as being the oldest child. I often ate in silence so that I wouldn't really disturb the family and maybe they wouldn't yell at me. But I also remember that because it was so stressful, sometimes, you know, the toasters and the plates were flying, I would have a pit in my stomach when I ate. And even to this day, when I get really, really stressed, I kind of feel that pit in my stomach. Interesting how our bodies respond to that. So if I was wanting to have, like, extra portions on my plate, my dad would say to me, calories, calories. You know, again, shame and shame. I was told not to do that because then I would be too fat. So in childhood, I think the seeds of perfectionism really started. And that's one of my character flaws to this day. I keep working on it with the help of a 12-step program, but I still have some of those little threads left. But I tried so hard to be like the perfect daughter, do the right thing, do the responsible thing. And somehow I thought that that would help prevent the emotional outbursts that were in my family. Again, you know, trying to control things, right, at a young age. When I was real young, at about age 5 or 6, I remember stealing coins from my mother's purse. Now, we lived with an alley behind our house, and right across the alley was a grocery store, so I was really close. So I would take the coins, and in those days, you know, you could get stuff for a nickel. So I got something sweet on a stick, and I ate it quickly and secretly. And then when I went to Brownies and Girl Scouts, I would carry my dues, you know, in a pocket or whatever, and I oftentimes would tell my scout leader, oh, you know, I forgot my dues at home, or I lost it on the way to school, whatever, so that when we had the after-school meetings, I didn't have the money. But what I was really doing was I was probably either saving it so I could have a sweet or crunchy treat on the way home, or I might have eaten it before the meeting started. So, again, lots of lying and dishonesty at a young age. I remember feeling some guilt and shame about this, but the compulsion to eat the excess food, the excess junk food, was just so high that it outweighed the virtue of being honest. As a teenager, I was really sad and depressed. In those days, in the 50s and 60s, I don't think they identified children as having had depression like they do right now, but I definitely was depressed. And I had a wish to die when I was in my middle teens. I never had a plan. I never made an attempt, but I had a wish to die. And so I was pretty depressed. I did have two very close friends all through middle school and high school. They became my eating buddies. And because we were able to sort of support each other through those times, we had similar backgrounds from our families of origin, and I have to say they saved me. I don't know what I would have done without these friends. And we continue to be friends now over 60 years, and they're just my dearest friends. They probably know almost as much as you guys know about me in my life, being in a fellowship. So anyhow, I had a maternal grandmother. I call her my granny. And she was the one person in my life that really gave me the unconditional love. And I think that's really what saved me. I oftentimes tell people that if there's anything really healthy about Lil, it's probably because I can thank Granny for it. Because she really would tell me, like, you can do whatever you want, Lil. You know, you can, you're smart. You know, you can do whatever. Don't pay attention to those negative things your mom and dad are telling you. And so she said I could set my mind and do anything I wanted to. I thought, how about that? So I always wanted to be a nurse, probably from the time I was about five. My parents told me that I was too sensitive and I was a bleeding heart and I would not be able to handle being a nurse. But the healthy part of me, and I can thank Granny for that, said to myself, watch me. I attended church and Sunday school as a child. I did have a belief in God. I looked upon God as a loving God, surprisingly, you know. And I did pray a lot, prayed that I would become a better person because I felt I wasn't a good person. And then in my senior year of high school, my closest friends and I had a terrible experience of being bullied. So that was a really awful time in my life. So, you know, now you have the self-esteem, you know, of a turnip, and then you have your peers, you know, ostracizing you. So I could hardly wait to graduate and get out of that little tiny town. So I left home at 18, and I went off to nursing school. Hundreds of miles away from Ashland, Wisconsin. And that was purposeful because I didn't want to be near home. And, you know, even though I was always criticized about being too fat or not right, I look back now at family pictures of me when I was like 8, 10, 12. You know, I didn't really look that bad. I was maybe 10 pounds overweight. I mean, I wasn't horribly overweight, but I carried such a heavy burden in my heart that that's where the weight was. You know, it wasn't necessarily on my physical body, but it certainly was inside of me. So in nursing school, because I wanted to be a nurse, the perfectionism kicked in again because, you know, I was going to be a really good nurse, and I was going to be the best nurse. So I added this extra burden of being perfectionistic to becoming a good student and a good nurse. And I did have a really successful career. I am very grateful for that. But my character flaw of perfectionism, as oftentimes character flaws can do, they can masquerade as a positive. And so perfectionism really did masquerade as a positive because I was getting all kinds of rewards and attention for being, you know, oh, you're such a good nurse, and attention to detail. All that stuff I just ate up because, oh, it was my character flaw. And now people thought I was pretty good. I'm pretty hot stuff. So it really became a very difficult thing, though, because the burden inside of carrying that came at a great emotional cost. And I carried that as I entered marriage and had my three kids and entered middle age. I've oftentimes referred to this like a soul sickness. I just never felt good enough about myself, never felt that I was okay. And then that kind of led to being like a people pleaser because I was like a chameleon. I could kind of be like for the party. I could, you know, however you wanted me to be, I could sort of be that way. Because if you really knew the real me, I felt, you wouldn't like me. And it was so hard not to be liked. When our daughter was 15 and our son was 13, I had what I call a God surprise. I had a surprise pregnancy. I was almost 40 years old. It wasn't part of my plan. And delivered our little daughter, Katie, who is the love of my life. I just love her dearly now. But I delivered her just a couple weeks before I turned 40. The pregnancy was not part of my plan. I was getting ready to go to graduate school and be a nurse practitioner, and I had all kinds of things, and I wasn't going to be doing this. As an example of how my life was at that time, if you opened my cupboard, you'd find all my spices were alphabetized. And then when I did my bulbs for doing daffodils and tulips, I had made a grid. And I put my bulbs here, here, and here. I mean, I was really a little nutty. But anyhow, that's where I was at. So then, of course, this would really shake me to my boots, right? And because I loved children, I just had this real kind of a disconnect because, you know, I wasn't happy about being pregnant, but I love kids. So I did say to myself, I'm going to have to get some counseling. So I did that when I was pregnant because I didn't want to have a child come in the world where that the child wasn't loved. And so I had a lot of stuff I had to do to kind of feel good about that. And then once I had the amniocentesis and realized that she was going to be healthy, and we chose to find out the sex at that time, because, of course, I gave everything away to my younger siblings, I had a crib and an automatic swing, but everything else was given away. So we opted to know the sex of the baby, and then once I realized that she was going to be healthy, I could kind of breathe a little sigh of relief as well. During that time, we also got into some couples counseling because, you know, relationships can get dicey when you are an overeater. And the things that were wrong with the marriage kind of came to the forefront. They were on the back burner for a long time, but now with a crisis and a crisis of my faith, I stopped going to church. I mean, all these things that was like, oh my God, who is this woman? I didn't even know who I was. We went into couples counseling because Larry was Mr. Happy, and I was not happy. So, struggled with depression throughout that pregnancy. And I pretty much ate my way through as well. I probably was 180 pounds when I delivered. And at that time, I was about 5'2". That's a little bit much for a 5'2 person. That was that. And then when our Katie was about 6 years old, I was still going to the same therapist on and off. Kind of did my 2,000-mile tune-up. She said to me, Lil, I think you have a problem with food. Moi? Have a problem with food? How dare? But she was familiar with 12 steps, and she was somebody I trusted. She said, I think you could benefit from OA. I thought, okay. So I went to regular OA meetings. That was about 1995. And I just kind of did what I wanted. I never got a sponsor. I worked the tools I liked. I didn't get a food plan. But, you know, in my heart of hearts, I knew that I belonged there. I knew, I had learned at least that much, that I was a compulsive overeater. I just wasn't ready to really go and do anything about it. I just tap danced around the program for a while. So any little recovery that I had, you know, of course, went by the wayside because I wasn't working a program. I continued to be pretty depressed. I was gaining lots of weight in those years and eventually was prescribed some medication for my depression. And during that time, I fiddled around with Jenny Craig and Weight Watchers and things like that. I would lose the weight, but then, of course, it came back because it didn't really address the underlying reason as to why I was overeating. And for me, my disease really manifested itself primarily in depression. So, give an example. I think I could have 22 points or something in the point system with Weight Watchers. I don't even know if they do that anymore. And I could have 22 points and, you know, maintain or lose. And there would be days where I wouldn't have a single fruit or vegetable. So, yeah, I was pretty far down the tubes. I also had experimented with diet pills earlier on, actually even before I was married, because there were times then when I thought, I'm not good enough. I found a doctor who had prescribed them, and it basically was speed. They don't have that anymore. When my Katie was 10, I was brought to OA How meeting by a dear program friend. Unfortunately, my dear friend Twyla has passed away. She didn't hang around program, and she went out into the world and ended up, you know, having some effects of being an overeater. But I will be grateful to her to my dying day that she was the one who brought me to program. She saw how depressed I was, and she said, I think this is going to help you. So, okay. And that was the year I was going to turn 50. So I thought, oh, I am not going to be fat and be 50. I'm going to get myself all together, and I'm going to feel better about myself. So again, they say we come in for the vanity, but we stay for the sanity. Yeah, that's I was at the vanity stage, although I knew I still had a problem with food. But because I had been having some exposure to OA already, and I knew that in my heart of hearts, when I was real honest with myself, that I was a compulsive eater, I just said, you know, I'm not doing well. I need to just do what the program says to do. So I got a sponsor right away. I got a dietitian and got a healthy food plan. And, you know, in all the years since that time, so now it'll be 26 years the end of this month that I started OA, really started OA and worked a program. And even though we know it's only one day at a time, but in all those years, life happened. I mean, you know, just because we're in recovery doesn't mean we don't have problems. Jeez. I had all kinds of stuff happen, and but during all those things, no matter how hard life got, how complicated it got, I never left program. I always kept going to meetings. I had lovely people I sponsored over the years. I always had a sponsor. You know, I was committed because I knew what it was like before OA, and I didn't want to go back there. So I am just very grateful to be in recovery. I know this is where I belong. I have nowhere else to go. And with God's help, I just pray I'll be here for the rest of my life. So that would be a blessing. One of the things I wanted to talk to you guys about today was the theme for, my talk. I call it the heart of recovery. And you may say, well, what exactly does that mean? What is the heart of recovery? Well, whenever I have a question, I always go to our literature to get the answers because we have lots of knowledge in those literatures, in the big book and all of our OA meditation books. There's just a wealth of information that we can learn from. So I found a really interesting little quote for the Voices of Recovery for the day of November 8. And it says in there that the goal of our recovery is really to develop a close conscious contact with a higher power, whom I call God. And I just think that that is incredibly important for me to remember. And in order to do that, I have to be praying, okay? So the quote goes something like this. I just needed to learn to listen and to follow my heart and not my head. My head can lead me astray, but my heart is never wrong. I just thought that was very helpful. So no matter what, I can help kind of handle my joys and pains without looking for extra food. I don't have to be in another cupboards, in another freezer. I can talk to God. I can just, you know, use my prayer life to the best of my ability and also tap into the wisdom in our fellowship, my other OA members, the literature, all the beautiful tools that we have to kind of help us when to stay and work a good program. Another quote that I kind of like is from Voices of Recovery for the date of December 25th. And the quote says this, stay out of your head. It is a dangerous neighborhood. If I listen to the voices in my head, they can lead me to rationalize and lead me to relapse. What works for me is to get out of my head and do some action, like following the steps, using the tools, you know, using all the beautiful things that we have available to us in our program. I also think that if I'm able to work a good program, I would be then, you know, be considered to be in recovery. And I never am recovered. I'm in recovery. I'm never going to be recovered, but I'm in recovery. So if I can hang in there and stay in recovery, some of these gifts are just going to start flowing because I'm in recovery. And I just call them kind of being gifts of the heart and being a heart-centered program. So, and it will flow from me then if I'm doing my right stuff. The first one I want to talk about is acceptance. And there is a lovely quote on that as well from For Today for January 6th. And it says this, acceptance is a simple act of going through what is presently facing me, be it pain or anger, despair, hopelessness, or other opposites too. I mean, I can do that when I'm happy or sad, whether or not I can have trouble with whatever's going on in my life, even if it's good stuff. I accept as naturally as I breathe events that lose their power to throw me off balance or disturb the basic rhythm of my life. So if I can accept that, then no matter what's going on around me, I can stay connected to my higher power and I can stay connected to program. And then I learn to accept life as life is. What an amazing idea, huh? An amazing concept. You know, my food addiction was acquired so that I could cope with all the crap that was going on in my childhood. And it helped me survive painful circumstances. But using excess food now does not serve my highest good. So it served a purpose at one time, but it's not where I want to be today. Another quote that I like hearing is, in God's economy, nothing is wasted. And that has meant a lot to me as well. When I think about all the stuff I had to go through to get to recovery, all those experiences, you know, really weren't not. I mean, they did serve a purpose. They weren't lost. They weren't wasted. I was led to program, but I had to go through all this stuff first before I could really say, this is what I need and this is my problem. So recovery has really brought about the awareness that I can't change the world. I can't change other people or other circumstances. I have to do the footwork and then leave the rest up to my higher power. Trust is another kind of heart-centered thing that I think flows from our recovery. I'm certainly not where I once was before coming to OA, but I need to keep working my program if I want to stay and have a peaceful life. And it's a process that I can really trust absolutely. Now, is it easy? No. Some days I hang by my toenails. It's not always easy, but I do my best to try to trust because deep down I know that God loves me and wants what's best for me. When I was in the food, that little channel that we have from our intuitive part up to God. For me, this is Lil talking now. I thought it got really clogged up because of the food and the excess food. And so that really nice, clear channel was no longer a clear channel. It got all mucked up because I was overdoing with the food and taking it to excess. So therefore, my intuitive feelings weren't as easy to access. But when I am out of the food and working a good program, that intuition opens up again. And so when I stopped eating compulsively, that was really a beautiful gift. I finally was able to trust that I had these gifts. I wasn't the leading heart, and I wasn't the person who was not going to be a good nurse or too sensitive. So I was, you know, made to feel many times that these things were abnormal in childhood, but I've come to believe through the program and what I've learned here that these are really gifts that I can be happy about, and I really very grateful. They've come in handy, being a mom, and they certainly came in handy with my profession. Turning things over to higher power, I do my best to do this and stay in the moment whenever I can possibly remember to do. Again, we're all human. We don't always do this exactly right. But I do have underlying faith that I think God has my back. I can turn things over, and God will give me what I need at that time, whatever I'm going through. So daily prayer has been one of the things that I use to turn things over to God. The whole idea of abstinence, you know, we talk about physical abstinence in our program, and this is certainly a beautiful gift we can get when we're in recovery. But I think it's not only just physical, but it's also emotional. Because there have been times in my program where I was eating perfectly great, but inside I was raging and I was ticked off at the world. So I really wasn't emotionally abstinent. And so I strive now to kind of keep that in balance. Because, you know, our feelings are just part of being human, whether we're sad, mad, scared. And I don't really have to escape it anymore by turning to the food to soothe those feelings. So that's a gift. And I think it's far better to be struggling, if we're doing any struggling, inside our program than to be out there in the world, being struggling out there and being all tied up with the food. It's not a pleasant place to be. Another gift I believe that is part of what flows from a heart would be courtesy toward myself and others. There's a really neat quote in For Today. It happens to be for the one for August 20th, and I'll read it to you. It talks about courtesy of the heart. And courtesy of the heart welcomes new ideas and people. It feels joy instead of fear. It sees with fresh eyes, and it appreciates rather than criticize what it sees. And that also is kindness toward myself. I can be kind to others, but I have to remember to be kind to myself as well. And I didn't always do that real well in other times in my life. But, you know, if we're not kind to one another here in OA, where else can we expect kindness? And that's one beautiful thing about being in the fellowship. People really are kind, and we're blessed to have that. So when I'm centered in my program, this courtesy just kind of flows out onto others. Love is also, I believe, another little byproduct of being in program and doing our best each day. It means that when I'm talking with somebody that I'm really listening, I'm not thinking about what I'm going to say next. I don't have to give advice. That was a new thing for me. Listening with care and compassion. I think that we find unconditional love in this room, and I'm just so grateful for that. Because without that, you know, I don't have much, really, not much to draw upon. I really feel that we're all so blessed to have this unconditional love, not only from our program, but from our higher power. You know, and many of us, maybe much like myself, perhaps, you too have had things that happened in your childhood or adolescence that were painful. It could have been abuse or neglect or just feeling unloved. But in these rooms of OA, you know, people do love us. They love us for just who we are. And where else in the world do we have this? How great is that? I've also learned, as I'm trying to do the courtesy of the heart stuff, that I don't have to speak to wound another person. I can talk in a gentler tone of voice. I don't have to criticize or give ultimatums. I would do that from time to time as well before program. But, you know, loving unconditionally isn't always easy, and it can be quite difficult at times. So because I'm a work in progress, I just really strive to be kind and to be courteous. And I think my spiritual recovery has helped me understand and begin to practice unconditional love to everyone around me. especially my family. That's a good place to start. Forgiveness is another thing that I believe comes out of our trying to work a good program. You know, I could recognize the faults that I have, but that may not always save me just because I know that they're there. And I've had to ask forgiveness many times in my life, and particularly in program as I've been doing the steps and things. When I've made a mistake, I can apologize now. It's much easier than it used to be if I've been unkind to someone. And primarily, I owed these amends to my husband. You know, we're on a 53-year marriage. You know, we have all kinds of material there to get at one another at, you know. But the best way I can show Larry that I'm really trying to make these changes and actually making changes, you know, something we kind of call living amends, it helps me to have him see that I could be kinder. I can speak in a softer tone. I don't have to be angry. But, you know, again, a process in my journey. So making amends is really an important thing. And I also have to forgive myself. I mean, one of the biggest amends I did when I first did my, you know, step 8 and 9 was I had to make amends to myself because the stuff I told myself in my head was so awful. I would never tell that to another person. So I had to make some amends to myself and to forgive myself for the times when I wasn't loving. And today now I just pray that I have a forgiving heart and that I have the willingness to let go of any bitterness. Keeping healthy boundaries is also a really cool thing that I've learned in program. I would like to read a quote to you that kind of talks to that. It's from the For Today for October 7th, and I'll read to you. Excess in anything, even consideration for others, is an expensive indulgence. So for me, it can be tempting to be evasive for fear of, you know, harming somebody, making someone to reject me. Maybe I wouldn't want to say exactly what I'm thinking. I might want to try to people please. But I've learned in program that this is really not honest, and it's really like living a lie. So I strive not to do that. And I also have learned that I can be honest and speak in a gentle tone of voice at the same time. How amazing is that? But it does take practice. Humility, another beautiful gift that I've learned in program, helps me to remain teachable. And we have some beautiful quotes in our For Today, and I love this one. It's from April 28th, and I'll read this to you. It's just a wonderful quote about humility. Humility is trying to do God's will as I see it, to the best of my ability at all times and in all places. Wow. It's that simple and that hard, right? For me, it was really hard to not always have the answers because I was like the resident expert in many things, in my home as well as in my profession. And as you know, I got a lot of accolades for that, for having all the right answers. So for me to have to say, I don't know, that was pretty humbling. But now it's easier. I can say if I don't know the answer to something, I can say, you know, I can just let that go and just say, I don't know, but I'll maybe help you find the answer. Gratitude, extremely important. Thanking God every day is kind of like just taking a deep breath and breathing. So important to me, my faith, and just being grateful for all the wonderful blessings I've had in program. A wise person in program once told me that there's a really strong correlation between gratitude and abstinence, and I like to think about that. Healthy communication, huge, 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 huge. I need to keep looking honestly at myself and at my motives, and I really strive right now to try not to be quick to blame someone for my own troubles, but again, I'm a work in progress, one day at a time, but I do my best not to rage at people, because I can't change them. Why rage at them, hey? And another wise program person said to me once, hey, if you want to really know how well you're working your program, take a look at how you're communicating with your family. That will give you a good clue, Lil. Yep, that's true. So step 12 is just a good way for us to live, and I wish many people in my world and people I come in contact with, I wish they worked a 12-step program. It would make life so much simpler, but it doesn't matter because for me it's something I need to do for myself. Because in the past, if I had any unchecked anger or hurt or resentments, that would just send me right to the freezer and the cupboards and wherever else, fast food places, you know, eating things that were unhealthy for my body. I'm going to close with just something about faith and prayer. As I said to you before, I was brought up in a faith home, even though, you know, I have some feelings about that. And today I do belong to an organized church in addition to having my OA program. But the really the concept of higher power, it was kind of easy for me to get when I first came to program because I had a belief already. But, you know, I never thought to ask God to help me with my food, not before OA. But right now I'd have to say that in being in OA, the relationship I have with my higher power now is very deep and very, very personal. I didn't have that when I was just going to church. And that's not to knock church, but I'm just saying I didn't have that close relationship with my higher power. I've also had a lot of spiritual experiences in this program. I haven't had, like, the lightning bolts, things happen, but I have had just a sense of being gently loved and cared for, and those have been my spiritual experiences. When I wake up in the morning, I say my prayers, and then I put my hand over my heart, and I say, Lil, I'm going to give you gentle, loving kindness today. And then I go about praying for the people that have asked for my prayers, my OA sponsees, anybody who might be struggling, and my family. I ask for guidance to be given the right words if I'm talking to somebody, and that I can make myself be a comfort to them if they need that. And right now, I've really had to pull together everything I've ever learned in program, and I'll just share a little bit about what's been happening right now in my life. And I'm so grateful to have this anchor because, you know, I would be not doing well. Our son, Mark, is struggling with the drug addiction. He's going to be 49 years old. So I have a 51, a 49, and a 35-year-old. Mark, the fancy word they use now is opiate use disorder. Okay, that's what they call it. In either case, he had a back injury. He got hooked on pain meds, and it just keeps ramping up. But every day I ask God to please keep him safe. I pray that God will help him seek a healthier life, maybe even give up drugs, if that's what God chooses. I don't know what God's will is for him. I'd like to think that it would be nice that would happen, but I have no guarantee. You know, Mark has his own path and his own journey. But my heart does ache for him, and that's why this program has been so helpful right now. I've had a trust that God has this. I've had a trust that the same God that loves me and watches over me also watches over my son. And so that has been somewhat of a comfort. So just to finish up here, I don't know if he's going to get healthy. I don't know if he's going to die. You know, I really don't know. But I trust that whatever happens, our family's going to be able to cope with it, and I'm going to be able to cope with it. I would never have had that sense of, acceptance or trust, whatever you want to call it. That never would have been crossing my mind before program. So that's a blessing, in spite of the hardships. So really, this recovery has been just so wonderful. It is just my anchor for life. I just am so, so happy to be here with all you beloved, beautiful souls, learning what I am, I'm able to do, learning the different things, learning that we have things that can happen to us, promises, and miracles can happen if we just hang around long enough. And it can happen. It has happened for me, and it can happen for you as well if we just kind of trudge that road of happy destiny, right? So I'm just saying to myself every day, thank God that I'm here, and I pray, God, that I be kept here. So I'm offering you peace and blessings, and thank you very much. I pass. Well, hello, everybody. You guys have lots of questions. I'll do my best to answer them. You know, I want to preface it by saying, you know, I am not the expert. I'm not the grand poobah of OA by any means. So I will talk to you from what my strength and what my experience has been. You know, and I don't pretend to know it all. You guys each probably have your own areas of expertise and have had other experiences that I haven't had. So I will humbly answer these, okay? This first one is, it's been said that our weakness is our strength. How was it for you doing the fourth step, and how did that affect your working the rest of your program? You know, I did a lot of different four steps, but the first really big one I did was that first summer. You know, I came in April, and my sponsor said, "Now you don't stop after step three. You got to get into 4 and 5 and blah, blah, blah." So I did the inventory that the HOW format uses. It has like 175 questions, and it goes through childhood, adolescence, adulthood. And it was very in-depth, and I was scared to do it because I looked at the questions ahead of time, and I thought, I can't do these. But even when I would read my questions to my sponsor, there were times that my throat would just, like, I couldn't get the words out because I was crying inside. But she said, just take a deep breath. You'll do it. You'll do it. So that first fourth step was probably very cleansing, and I call it kind of like a spring cleaning for my soul. It really was the best thing I ever did the first year I was in program. So, yeah, fourth step is great. And in, over the years, I've had other things that have come up, and I've done mini four steps, you know, with my sponsor. And sometimes I'll go to a retreat, and there'll be a 12-step retreat, and we do steps all over again, like in a whole weekend. That steps don't have to take you, you know, 5 years to do, although some of us do drag our feet. So the fourth step was really helpful. And I had a very, very compassionate sponsor who just let me talk. And when I had a cry, I cried and, you know, just listened. And it was just, like I said, I highly recommend it. How did you come to your physical abstinence and what came first? Well, when I first got into the OA HOW program, you know, it was suggested that we get a dietitian. So, again, I was paying attention to the rules. I wasn't doing well on my own, and I knew I was ready to make some changes in life. So I just followed the directions. If they told me to get a dietitian, I did. So my physical abstinence came when I probably gave up the first 30 days. I was advised to think about giving up white flour and sugar, because for many of us overeaters, that can be a trigger. Not everybody, but it sure was my case. So I found that after I finished those first 30 days, I didn't have the cravings like I had before. So for me, it was kind of like, yeah, there's something to this. So I'm very careful about what I put in my body. I read labels very carefully. And so the physical abstinence came first, and then the other stuff kind of fell into place. I think when we clear our minds, and we have a clear mind because we're not doing the substances that used to make us get kind of crazy, then I think we're in a position where we can hear the messages of recovery. That's just my own take on it. How do you define your abstinence, and what does it look like for you? Well, right now, and I've had a dietitian forever. I mean, basically the last 26 years I've seen somebody because, you know, we go through different things in our life. When I came in, I was 50, and then I went to what we call mental pause. Have you ever had that? Where, you know, your body isn't always responding. Things start shifting. So I had to tweak my food plan, but I always touch base with another professional. So I love my dietitian. And over the years, my food plan has changed. And whenever I feel like what I used to eat all of a sudden is starting to call to me a little bit, then I have to say, well, I could do that 10 years ago, but now I seem to want to have that four times a week, even though it's a good food. So I guess for me, too, is just the idea of being honest with what I'm really feeling inside. If something is calling to me, it should be a wake-up call that I would be looking at. Did I get something in my diet that maybe I don't normally eat, like if I go out to dinner and get something in a sauce or something at a restaurant. So my abstinence, I would say that, you know, just striving to not be doing compulsive food behaviors, you know, and then I do have a very healthy plan that my dietitian has given me where I have so many fruits and vegetables a day, so much protein, and it works. So I feel really good. Physically, I feel really, really good. But it can change over time. Have you relapsed, and for how long? And if so, was it hard? And how did you get? What did you do to get back to a good, strong program? Well, you know, I've had slips in the program. I never really left the program, and I just think that's amazing that that I felt that it was so important to me to not go out and be gone for months and months at a time. So I never really had what you would call a relapse, but I've had some slips where, you know, I felt like I had to have this particular food at a wedding reception or, you know, maybe I would have it for 1 or 2 days and then all of a sudden I would get myself reined back in again because my sponsor would say, okay, you know, if I could tell you that the food that you want is going to take care of all your problems, I'd say go ahead and eat it. But no, you don't need that. Your body can't tolerate that. And just to be able to be honest with myself about that and know that there's certain foods that are just going to trigger me and call me. say more about dealing with perfectionism. Oh, boy, I wish I could say a lot about that. It is still a character flaw that I know is there. I've asked God many, many times in my sixth and seventh step to be removed of that. I think it's much better over the years. I'm not nearly as compulsive as I used to be about certain things. I go for weeks at a time and not clean my house, whereas before I used to, you know, every 2 days I clean the toilet and, you know, all this and that, crazy stuff. But the basic perfectionism for me, I think, was just because I was feeling like I wasn't an okay person, and therefore if I would try to be, you know, inhumanly doing these things to make myself seem like I'm going to be able to do life perfectly, that's where I get tripped up. If I find myself, you know, overthinking something or trying to overplan, like if we have company that comes, as a matter of fact, you know, do I make 5 desserts for them, or are 2 enough? You know, and then I have to say, oh, they don't need that. They give them good, honest food. You know, they, you know, fruits and vegetables and protein are fine. But my family all like to eat, so then it's kind of like, okay, well then we're sending that home with you because I can't have that around my house. I would just call to me terribly. So dealing with perfectionism is an ongoing thing. I certainly haven't mastered that, but it is something I'm aware of. I usually can find myself going down that path, and I'm usually able to self-correct. But, again, it's a process, guys, right? We don't do this right every day. And nowhere in the big book does it say we have to be perfect. That's not a word in the big book. So I try not to be perfect. How did you finally give all to God? Oh, wow. And that's an ongoing thing, too, right? You know, beautiful question, though. I wish I could say, everything I do, I turn over to God. You know, that is a goal. I would strive to turn all my things over to God. Most of the time, I think I do that. But I'm human, so I'm not going to do it right all the time, and that's okay. You know, we have a framework we can work within. We have guidelines. We have directions. We do our best each day. And if we falter and make a mistake, you know, we try to just pick ourselves up and continue on again. And so that's a very good question. But I'm doing much better with it than I did 10, 20 years ago. I'm much better at turning things over to God. And some of it is just life experiences, what happens in your life, what crisis is going on. Sometimes it's like, I don't know, God. I don't know why I'm going through this, but I just know that it's going to have an outcome. I don't know what it is. It's going to somehow work out in the end. And that's kind of my little mantra to myself. The other question is, how do you apply the principles in all your affairs regarding outside of OA? Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, I said that 12-step living is just a good way for us to live our lives. So I would say that I strive really to do the principles. I try to be honest and open and compassionate and loving. And, you know, when I make a mistake, I own up to it. That was something I didn't do before program. I would be ashamed if I made a mistake. I wouldn't want you to know that. But the ego has been deflated somewhat in program, and that's what our literature says will happen. The ego will somehow get a little bit more right-sized. And so practicing the principles is a goal, and I don't always do it right every day, but I know it's something that would help me to have a better life if I do. So I try to remember to do that. So I don't know if that answered that question. Practicing the principles. What? Oh, wow. What changed when you no longer had thoughts of wanting to die? Or do those thoughts still come to you? And how do you deal with them differently now? Yeah. You know, I have not had that wish to die for very many, many years. And I think a lot of it has just been just coming to recovery. I did have a lot of therapy in my life to feel okay about myself before I came to OA. Now OA is my therapy. I had to learn how to just accept what happened in my past, knowing that I didn't cause it. I didn't make these problems. They were my circumstances in my life. And right now, there's so much in my life that's life-giving, and I love so much about my life that those thoughts of wanting to die, thank God, are gone. I'm just so grateful for that. I've also had the help of medication over the years. You know, medication is fine. There's nothing wrong with meds. If our body isn't producing the right amount of neurotransmitters to keep our mood stable, many times for us, those of us that have struggled with depression, a medication is kind of like replacing what our body doesn't make. So I have no qualms about that. And I have been on and off antidepressants at different times in my life. And I think that that's helped me. So I'm glad I don't have those thoughts of wanting to die. Those were terrible times when I was growing up, I'll tell you. When you start to fear about your son, oh yeah, this is a tough one, isn't it? When you start to fear about your son, how do you get back to the present moment and release him to God? And again, ongoing, you know. My heart just aches, as I said, and when I talked about the life he has. And, you know, I think about him as a small child and when he was little. And when he told me, "You're the best little mom in the whole world." And then, you know, he got to be a teenager, and then he was kind of became like the spawn of Satan with some of the stuff he said to me. Horrible things, like, "You're a terrible mother, and go do these unnatural things to yourself and just go away." But to get back to the fear, and I think the program has really helped me with that. I really think it has. And just my prayer life. Because I really do have had experiences where God has answered my prayers. So I do trust that, even though I may not know what the outcome's going to be for him, I just tell him I love him, and I, you know, we don't even talk about, well, how many drugs a day are you using. I don't do that. You know, how many times you have your oxycodone, or how many long-acting morphines you have a day. He has a lot of that stuff going on. The stuff he takes would be enough. One day I would not survive if I took what he's taking, but he's got such a tolerance to it now. So. The fear I have is that, you know, he might die. That is my biggest fear. But I can't fix him. I just can't fix him. I can only pray for him, let him know that he's loved, let him know that whenever he wants to talk, we can talk, and then just have to let it go, you know? Boy, that's a tough one. It is really a tough one. And so that is a lot of my sadness right now. It's just, you know, the son, when I'm dealing with my son. But I do a visual, and this is, maybe sounds kind of strange to you, but this helped me many years back when he was struggling, because he's been struggling on and off since he was 15 with something. I just visualized him as a little baby, and then I might cry when I start talking about this. Then I just hold him up to God, and I say, "God, I give you my son." And that's the practice I do. So I can visualize him as a small baby or a child, and then that somehow makes me feel like, okay, you know, this is all happening for a reason. I don't understand it, but it's all happening for a reason. And I do have hope. You know, he may turn it around. You know, I don't want to say there's no hope. If there's no hope, boy, I'm really in a deep doo-doo. But the reality also is that he has to want to get healthy. I can't do it for him. And it's an excellent question. I don't know if I answered it appropriately, but it feels like that's what I'd like to say about it. So, okay, and then this is kind of a similar one, too, about relapsing and slipping. I would say that the times I've slipped, they've been just a day or two at a time type of thing. And then because I've had a sponsor always, I would be honest with my sponsor, and then we try to figure out what was the trigger that made you want to do X, Y, Z or eat this particular item, and, you know, and why are you beating yourself up now, and why do you have all this guilt and shame because you did X, Y, Z? And so having a compassionate, caring sponsor has been really helpful. And then just going back to our literature. I mean, I'm looking at our literature all the time. Every day I read stuff. The Big Book is great. The things I quoted today, The Four Today and A Vision for You, those are wonderful books. But we have a wealth of books. We've been so blessed in this program to have wonderful literature. So literature and having a sponsor. And then never stopping going to meetings. never stopping. That was what saved my life. Did I always want to go? No. Did I make myself go? Yes, because I knew that that was what was expected. Those were the directions. So I paid attention. Do you keep a gratitude journal? I don't write at this present moment, but I have done it. I don't have a gratitude journal right now, but I think it's a great practice. Those of you that do it probably could say lots of things about that. I am aware of my gratitude, and so I will thank God in my prayers for it, but I don't necessarily write it all down, not at this time. But that might be a good idea to start doing again. I like that. Thank you. What is your favorite step? Oh, wow. I guess I would have to go back to the first three steps because they're so basic for my recovery. I can't. God can, and I think I'll let God. And those are like steps 1, 2, and 3. I can't do it alone. God can help me. And, yeah, I'm going to turn my life over and have him help me. Those are favorite steps, the first three. But I also love the fourth step, like we talked about. So the fourth step is also a good one. I guess they're all kind of good in their own way, aren't they? I'm not answering that very well, am I? Yeah, the steps are just so wonderful. I can't say enough about it. This program has just been so wonderful. And the last question here has to do with body image. Oh, wow, this is such a biggie, isn't it? For many of us, what is your greatest help or thinking procedure for horrible body image besides praying? Well, that's certainly one. No matter how skinny or how physically healthy, I still feel I have a dislike and sometimes abhor my reflection. Boy, I have sure been there. I mean, that's been there. When I was even a lot heavier, way heavier, I didn't want to look in the mirror. I would hide myself under loose clothes and wear a lot of black. When I would have those feelings of not feeling good enough or feeling shame and disgust, really, at how I looked, it also affected our marriage. You know, I didn't want to have sex. I didn't want to be intimate. That wasn't really fair to my husband. So I had to make some amends along those lines. But, yeah, body image is huge. And I was so grateful today. One of our pre-conferences was on body image, and I signed up for it. Done by Lori. Did a great job. And Sue facilitating it. But that was very helpful. There's more stuff to learn all the time. You know, we're never done learning. That's the beautiful thing about this. We never graduate from this program, you know. More shall be revealed, right? As the longer we go on. But yeah, body image, I think for many of us overeaters, just in general, is a tough issue. And especially those of us that might have been, you know, abused in some way as children, you know, whether it, you know, sexual abuse certainly comes up for a lot of women when they've been abused as children. They have issues with body image. But we can have body image because we've been shamed, and our whole culture is so fat. They're just so fat, awful. I mean, anybody that's not looking like a model or Twiggy or something, our literature, in the media, they just tell us all these things about how we should look. It's no wonder we all don't have a little bit of problem with body image. But I think we in OA, it's just part of who we are as people. It's just something that we may all struggle with from time to time. So I just can say that I share feeling disgusted. There are times I didn't want to look in the mirror. Absolutely. It's better now. But there's probably always going to be some little threads of body image that I'll need to keep working on. So, yeah. So, wow. I think we got through the questions. How about that? Woohoo!